be close to a vaccine breakthrough for coronavirus? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, the latest on that Pfizer trial for a COVID vaccine. We'll hear from a local patient taking part in the trial. What are your questions about the COVID vaccine? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, honoring this area's veterans. We're doing it every day on the show this week. Today, we spotlight the Fire Watch, a group working to prevent veteran suicides. But first this hour, the latest on the pandemic. The state now reports 847,821 cases of COVID and 17,179 deaths. This happens as Jacksonville City Council President Tommy Hazzouri canceled Tuesday's meeting of the City Council. Council member Scott Wilson this week announced he has tested positive for the COVID-19 virus. And as we all prepare for what could be a very tough winter dealing with this pandemic, the drug maker Pfizer announced Monday that an early analysis of their coronavirus vaccine trial suggests that the vaccine might actually be very effective in preventing COVID-19. This is a promising development as we all wait anxiously for any positive news about a global pandemic that has killed more than a million people worldwide. We're getting the latest now as we welcome to the show Chad Nielsen. He's an infection prevention specialist at UF Health Jax. Hi, Chad.
Hi, good morning.
Good to have you on the show. Also with us, Casey Ayers, a local patient who has been taking part in the COVID Pfizer clinical trial right here in Jacksonville. Hi, Casey.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
In a moment, I'm going to go to Casey, and he's going to explain all about his experience being a so-called guinea pig in this COVID vaccine trial. I can't wait to hear what he's experienced with all of this. That's in a few moments. Give us a call at 549-2937. But first, let's go to our infection prevention specialist, Chad Nielsen, UF Health Jax. What's your initial reaction to this announcement from Pfizer?
Well, it's obviously very promising. I think that there's a lot of resources and money being dumped into this from really around the world, and so I think the whole world is watching this and anticipating some good results now that the company has spoken up. So we have to be very optimistic, but still know that there's still a lot of work left to do to figure out how effective this is going to be long term.
And can you explain a little bit about all the back and forth about Operation Warp Speed, which is the Trump administration's effort to develop a coronavirus vaccine, and Pfizer's relation or not to that?
Yeah, so there's many companies across the world that are trying to develop this vaccine, and the Operation Warp Speed is our federal government's response to try and inject money into the search for a vaccine worldwide. Pfizer's actually partnered with a company in Germany called BioNTech to do their development, and I don't know whether or not Operation Warp Speed has dumped money into that, but certainly the second part of Operation Warp Speed is once a vaccine that is efficacious is developed and is ready for mass marketing, Operation Warp Speed will be dumping money into that to try and develop it at a high rate to get as many doses out there as possible.
Let's go now to Casey Ayers, a Jacksonville man who decided to take part in the COVID vaccine clinical trial Pfizer is conducting right here in Jacksonville, among other locations. Casey, what made you decide to throw your name into this clinical trial and take part?
It's a mixture of two factors. On the one, a feeling like, you know, this was a way to be able to do something positive about a topic that's been on all of our minds so constantly for the last year now. And then also, from kind of the knowledge that as someone in relatively good health, in an age bracket that is not likely to be a priority, it was an opportunity to potentially receive some protection. And so it's a, you know, it's kind of a mixture of potential public and personal good and some comfort with the Pfizer method in particular that led me to enroll in the trial.
Okay, so you enrolled and then what happened? Tell us how this all shook out for you.
Sure. So back in August, we had kind of the first consultation and an opportunity to learn more about the trial. And that same day, in fact, was when the first injection was issued. After that, about 2 weeks later, patients come back for a booster. And in this trial, it's roughly a 50-50 split, to my understanding, between those who might be receiving the placebo and those who might be receiving the vaccine candidate. From that point, we returned a month after the booster to provide an initial blood draw, which I believe is where most of the data that we're seeing now is beginning to come from. And that'll continue in expanded increments over the next 2 years to ensure how kind of strong and long-lasting the effect of the vaccine candidate might be.
So what happened to you physically then, Casey, when you agreed to be part of the trial? Tell us about your experience with this.
Sure. So side effects were something that were discussed, of course, as a possibility. There's a short monitoring period after the injection, about an hour, where they want to make sure that there wasn't an immediate adverse reaction of some sort. And I would describe the side effects much like those that some people complain about with seasonal flu vaccines. Myself, I've not personally had an adverse reaction to a flu vaccine in the past. I did have a reaction to this one in terms of an elevated temperature, kind of a low-grade fever, as well as body aches and some chills. Setting in after the first injection, about 24 hours after the fact, lasting for about 12 hours, and then for the booster, about 12 hours after injection, again, lasting about 12 hours. Not terribly pleasant for side effects, and I would hope that perhaps I'm at perhaps the more aggressive end of side effects that people might experience, but it's not something that I regret whatsoever.
You were never scared? You were never scared to do this?
Not particularly. I had a lot of respect for kind of the innovation of this mRNA-based method that Pfizer and Moderna in particular have pursued, where my thought with my limited knowledge on the situation was that it was a relatively low risk, albeit potentially low reward scenario, where it wasn't likely to have anything go particularly wrong, but it just might not work. And so the news that we're seeing that there's actually a quite high efficacy rate is very good indeed.
All right. So then, Chad Nielsen, how will we know if a guy like Casey is immune, has immunity built up to COVID based on the clinical trial experience he's been through? How do we know if this is going to work long term?
Yeah, it really is tracking these individuals long term and expanding the amount of people getting the vaccine across different populations. So there's still some outstanding questions, obviously, with this vaccine trial is how do we know it's going to have long term effective immunity? We know that the flu vaccine doesn't. We know that we have to change it every year because the virus changes genes on us. Will this do the same thing? There's no way to really know until we get a larger amount of data tracking this moving forward. So Casey is just the tip of the iceberg on this, and certainly folks in my field thank him and others like him who volunteer to be a part of this. But really, we just need long-term data tracking on these folks who are going to be getting this vaccine. And once it does hit mass distribution to the general public, if it's Pfizer's or if it's someone else's, looking at this 6 months, 8 months, 9 months from now is going to be where the proof is.
We're speaking with Chad Nielsen of UF Health JAX and Casey Ayers, a local patient taking part in that Pfizer clinical trial to develop a vaccine for coronavirus. Pfizer says they could be close to a breakthrough. What are your questions about the COVID vaccine? Would you take the vaccine or not? Give us a call. It's 549-2937 to join the show. Ray is in Orange Park. Hi, Ray. Good morning.
Good morning. My question to you is this something that you think the insurance companies are going to cover? And is there anything like maybe later on you'd have to take it like the flu shot every year? I guess there's 8 million questions everybody has before they say, yes, this is the way I want to go, and should everybody take the shot?
Right. Thanks, Ray. So, Chad, let's begin with his first question. Will this be covered under most health insurance plans if a vaccine becomes widely available?
Yeah, I think you could expect that to happen. Certainly, insurance companies have become accustomed to covering seasonal influenza vaccines and similar. I do think that the insurance companies are actively working on this to get whatever vaccine comes to market covered, really for the greater public health good. That's obviously not a guarantee, but I do think that that will be an option moving forward, is that they will cover it.
And Pfizer is saying they want to manufacture enough doses of this vaccine by the end of the year to immunize 15 million to 20 million people. Stocks surged on the news, by the way. The S&P soared after this announcement from Pfizer. But, you know, Chad, there's also this caution against hyping the results of this. We just don't know yet if this is the silver bullet we need.
Yeah, absolutely. This is still very early evidence, and there's a lot of outstanding questions about this. Is that what types of illness will it present? Will it prevent? Is it going to work with severe cases of COVID or just asymptomatic light cases? We don't know yet. Will it be effective in all sorts of peoples and all sorts of ages, whether it's race or ethnic background or ages? We don't know those questions yet. So until this is independently verified by the different organizations who do that sort of thing, we just have a lot of unanswered questions yet. But I don't want to take away from the fact that this is very promising. You know, it's been a 9 to 10 month period since we've known about COVID-19, and to get a vaccine with 90% effectiveness in the first wave of the study, that's really a feat that modern science can really look back and be impressed with.
It's 549-2937 to join us. Katie tweets the show, progress on a vaccine is great news, but wearing a mask is still the number one thing we can do to slow the spread and save lives. These Florida lawsuits trying to make mask mandates illegal are stupid, she says. Another tweet from a listener, my wife is a biostatistician. She's worked with multiple pharmaceutical companies. We aren't taking any COVID vaccines anytime soon. Casey Ayers, our clinical trial patient, what do you say to those out there who are really skeptical and will not take this vaccine should it be offered on the to the open market?
Well, I can understand the hesitancy, especially early on, and it is very important not to rely on any single anecdotal piece of evidence, including my own experience. But as the safety data is published in the weeks to come and we see this begin to roll out to healthcare professionals and other critical areas, and we enter a new period of higher production, I would urge people to reconsider that. I think in retrospect, we're going to look back on this as an Apollo tier achievement in terms of science being able to move forward. And this mRNA-based approach of being able to very quickly program, in a way, a vaccine that can combat effectively viruses like this could have some really earth-shaking ramifications on healthcare more broadly for a lot of other sorts of virus issues that we face in the years and decades to come.
It's 549-2937 as we talk about the Pfizer clinical trial for a vaccine for coronavirus. Local patients have been taking part in this trial. Amanda is on the South Side. Hi, Amanda. Good morning.
Hi, Melissa. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to share that I was also part of the Pfizer-BioNTech study here
okay.
in Jacksonville, and I experienced different side effects from what Casey had reported within 24 hours, and it did last about a day to a day and a half. I had nausea, vomiting, high blood pressure. I have a pre-existing condition of hypertension.
Okay.
But my blood pressure shot up to 150 over 110. And I also, I had chills.
Mm.
So it was a very, very uncomfortable and unpleasant experience. And I did kind of consider or reconsider getting that booster shot. So my main concern is that I'm not seeing enough of the type of side effect that people like me in the study were experiencing, and not having that information spread might deter people from who had experienced the same symptoms that I had from getting the follow-up shot. So they would.
But Amanda, did you go ahead and get the booster?
I did.
You did. Yes. And why did you decide to do the trial if you have a pre-existing condition?
Well, first of all, when I went into the clinic, I felt I'm a person of color, and they said at the time that this study had originated in Germany, where they had enough representation from Caucasian Americans, but they didn't have enough diversity in their study. So I felt a bit of a civic duty to participate And I'm also a strong believer in science and vaccines. So that's what compelled me to participate. They also, you know, evaluated. I have, it was phase two/phase three at the time. And based off of my other vitals, like I'm under 35, they evaluated me and said that I was healthy enough to receive the vaccine.
Hmm. And so you don't regret it? You're glad you did your bit?
Yes, I'm really proud to have participated in this study in this small way. I do want to caution people that, you know, you could have no side effects. You could have the side effects that I experienced. And still very much we don't know the effectiveness of this because it's based on such a small number of people.
Absolutely right, Amanda. Yeah, such smart insights from you. And thanks so much for calling. And thanks for your participation in this. Thanks, Amanda. So Chad Nielsen, UF Health Jax, here we have Amanda on the South Side. She took part in the trial. We have Casey Ayers on the line, another local patient. We need to thank the Americans who are stepping up and volunteering to do this clinical trial work, first off. And then also, what about her comment that she had a completely different set of symptoms? There's still so much we don't know about this virus and whether or not these samples of patients in the trials are large enough to really determine whether this is going to work for the vast majority of people out there.
Yeah, and I think it's important to understand as well, these mRNA-based vaccines are brand new. This is really the first large-scale mRNA vaccine trial that's been conducted in the world, really. So the fact that there's a variation of side effects is ultimately not surprising because this is a different type of vaccine makeup than what we've seen previously with hepatitis B or the chickenpox or what have you. So this is why the independent investigators and universities are really looking at this vaccine trial with interest, because not only are we looking to see is this going to be effective for COVID-19, which is the primary outcome, but also with an mRNA vaccine, what are the side effects going to be? Is this going to be something that's going to be taken up well by the public? Or will people say, you know, look, I don't want these kind of symptoms that are associated with this vaccine versus something more traditional? So there's a lot of questions here still to be answered, but certainly we do think those who are taking part of this, they really are trailblazing for the science.
549-2937 to join us. AJ is in Middleburg. Hi, AJ. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a question about what we know of the Pfizer data that they're using on this test right now. How broad the test subjects are? Is it from a diverse background of all types of individuals? The other thing that I think we all need to keep our ears open for is as this progresses, what's the quality of the data that's coming back? And I say potato, you say potato, the third person may say white starchy food, and we're all talking about the same thing, but we're getting three different answers. For conversation, that's okay, but when you're talking about test results or whether a vaccine's effective, it's not okay. So what kind of safeguards are being put into the quality of the data that's getting returned so that we know whether this is effective or not?
All right, AJ, let's ask our infection prevention specialist. Luckily, we have Chad Nielsen of UF Health, Jax, joining this show quite a bit lately. So, Chad, what about AJ's question?
Yeah, very relevant questions, and I think that's what the million-dollar questions are, is what is the population makeup look like that Pfizer's using? So we know that there's a little over 43,000 people in the trial. We don't know who got the vaccine, how many. We don't know who got the placebo or how many. These are all questions that I think a lot of the experts like me are saying, hold up, we need to know more, and Pfizer has yet to publish that. And that's totally normal, by the way. There's no evidence that Pfizer's trying to hide results, but now that they've made this claim and it's adjusted the stock markets and it's gotten a lot of media, now is the time where Pfizer needs to come out and put out the data that says, was this effective in a diverse population? What was our trial makeup? And how is that quality of data being measured? So those are all really relevant questions. We're still waiting to see those answers.
549-2937 as we talk about a vaccine for coronavirus. Casey Ayers, now that you're through this clinical trial, are you worried at all about, I don't know, long-term effects of being exposed to these microbes?
So there's still obviously the potential for infection, especially until we know what the true effectiveness of the vaccine is, and just as importantly, get it distributed widely. You know, at a 90% effective rate, a lot of people would notice that the other 10% is still lurking out there. But that becomes much less of a statistical challenge to deal with if more and more of the population is inoculated. So as for me, it's done very little to change the way that I've kind of comported myself in life, still being very careful with distancing and with wearing masks. But I do feel marginally more comfortable as a participant in the trial, perhaps doing things like grocery shopping for family members, especially if we head into a more comprehensive second wave here into the fall. I feel very slightly more comfortable taking risk on behalf of others in particular.
On our Facebook page, Jay writes, I think a vaccine is a defeatist strategy. Stopping the virus should be priority number one. What are your thoughts? Curtis on the north side. Hi, Curtis. Good morning.
Good morning. My comment is this, guys. As an African-American male, 65 years old, I would not be taking the vaccine unless after, like, President-elect Biden say, after much scientific results and testing, because we trust the government to look out for us. This government has failed every citizen in every way possible. They let a crook be elected to the White House. They let him be in office 4 years, committing all kind of crimes they've never seen before. Then this guy stroked racism and hatred. And so now you expect for me to trust this government to create something that's going to protect me for something that they have no idea what it's all about. I'll wait for your answers.
Okay, Curtis, so I hear your political lens that you're looking at this through. So let me ask Chad about that. Chad, we got a country split right down the middle. We've been through a contentious election dominated by the pandemic, and you could make the argument that the pandemic was part of what doomed President Trump's hopes of reelection. What do you say to people who see this whole vaccine matter through the lens of politics? Depending on who's in office when the vaccine was developed or brought to market, they might not trust the results or trust its effectiveness.
Yeah, so I totally understand where people are coming from, and this is something that we've seen actually throughout history. The different vaccines that are made up and have been distributed to eradicate world diseases have always had a political tinge to them, and so I certainly understand folks who feel that way. What we want to portray to those folks who have these distrust issues is that we, as on the scientific community, are working to ensure that this is being put through the proper channels and processes, and I agree with them that oversight has to be done correctly, and that in order for the vaccine to be effective, it's not only biologically does it work, but it's does the population uptake the vaccine? Do they trust in it? Do they want to line up to get it to protect them? And that's on public health and the government to help sow those seeds to allow people to have that trust, and that's what our job is in the scientific community. It's not enough to just produce it. We have to gain the public's trust again, and that's what we're working very hard to do.
Well, thanks so much for enlightening our audience this morning. We always appreciate it. He's Chad Nielsen, infection prevention specialist at UF Health Jax, and also with us, Casey Ayers, a Jacksonville resident who took part in the Pfizer clinical trial for a coronavirus vaccine. Did it right here in town. Guys, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
And much more still ahead. Later on the show, some book club ideas to take your mind off politics for a little bit. But up next.
We have clinicians who understand veterans, who understand what the challenges are. And what we try to do is make a connection.
We'll tell you how the local nonprofit, The Fire Watch, is working to prevent veteran suicides. That's in a moment. We'll be right back.
Joe Biden says he wants to unite a divided America. Easier said than done, leaders around the globe face the same challenge.
How do you roll back the rage? How do you bring people together? I think that is the question today, not just in the U.S. and Lebanon, but beyond as well.
Rage, unity, and what comes next as a new presidency begins. It's On the World.
Tomorrow at 3 on WJCT News 89.9.
20 years ago, election night turned into election month.
A lot of the television networks started saying, we project Al Gore the winner in Florida.
The state of Florida and its 25 electoral votes.
And knowing everything else we knew, that was making it kind of look like a big sweep.
Bush v. Gore revisited. With lessons for now. Next time on It's Been a Minute from NPR.
Saturday at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, tomorrow is Veterans Day, and Jacksonville will observe the day with its traditional downtown parade. All this week on the show, we are spotlighting local efforts to help veterans on the First Coast. The nonprofit The Fire Watch is one of them. Their mission? To stop veterans' suicides. I spoke about it with General Mike Fleming, chair of The Fire Watch. Take a listen.
General Mike Fleming, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Melissa, I enjoy it. Thank you so much for having me on.
So let's talk about the Fire Watch. You're the chair of this organization, and as we mark Veterans Day this week in Jacksonville, we're trying all week on this program to get the word out about resources for veterans. You are so involved in this. Tell us about the mission of the Fire Watch.
So, Melissa, thank you. The Fire Watch was created really to address the national tragedy of veteran suicide. Unfortunately, by some estimates, there are 22 veterans per day dying of suicide, and this is all generations of veterans. And so we have a lot of great partners who are doing things to address this. The Veterans Administration does a good job. We have a great team here locally. But what we wanted to do is say, what could we do as a community to address this this concern? And Rory Diamond, who's the CEO of Canines for Warriors and also a Jacksonville City Councilman, said we can do something here locally. And so what we've done is we have the five counties across Northeast Florida, Baker, Clay, Nassau, St. John's, and Duval County have all banded together to say we're going to fight this together. So we have citizen representatives from all five of the counties. We have a commissioner or a city councilman who's our liaison. And we're working on initiatives to address veteran suicide, not certainly on our own, but see where we can fill in gaps and start programs that can address the veteran suicide tragedy.
Yeah, and what does the data show? What are some of the best practices to reach out with veterans before they make that terrible decision? What are some ways that work?
Yep, that's a great question, Melissa, and really you hit it. And you look at connectivity. I worked at the Stephen A. Cohen Military Family Clinic at Centerstone here in Jacksonville. We have clinicians who understand veterans, who understand what the challenges are. And what we try to do is make a connection. And it's a connection across, again, all generations of veterans, which obviously we have some Korean War veterans. We have a lot of Vietnam War veterans all the way through the veterans who are currently serving. And what we want to do is how can we make a better connection point? And so we created something called a Watchstander program. And the Watchstander program is you have about an hour of training, but it's to connect veterans not only to other veterans, but to non-veterans. Because, Melissa, one of the great things about Northeast Florida, really throughout the United States, is that we have people who've never served, like yourself, who want to do something for veterans. And the Watchstander program is something we've created where they can be involved with that. Because veterans, by and large, day-to-day, we maybe have 10% of the population have some kind of veterans experience, but 90% don't. And so what we need to do is connect those individuals who care about veterans and help them learn. And we've created the Watchstander program so we can be better connected not only with veterans to veterans, but also veterans and non-veterans.
And you're really trying to get the word out. You want at least 10,000 people across this community to sign up for this program and just do a short free training session, right, so that they can contribute?
Yep. That is exactly right. And we got this training, but when you join, you also get a wallet card that will help you. If you end up talking to a veteran, and a veteran obviously is in crisis, then there's a veterans crisis line that you can connect them with. But most veterans are not in crisis, and so we've created on the firewatch.org website a resource guide. And then that resource guide is a compilation of the resources that are available uniquely to veterans, military families, active duty personnel here in Northeast Florida. And so a watchstander can look at that and say, hey, do you know about this? Because we really feel like if veterans get the resources that they've earned, then we can help them enhance their lives.
This is such a critical need nationally, as your organization, the Firewatch, reports on its website, and that's thefirewatch.org. At least 20 U.S. veterans take their lives every day. There's really been no substantial reduction to that number in quite some time. In our area alone, we have more than 150,000 veterans, and you're one of them, of course. When you talk to local veterans, what do they say to you about what they're going through and some of the challenges that are most difficult for them?
I think one of the biggest challenges for veterans, Melissa, is having them adjust, go from military life to civilian life. And some of them come out and they go immediately from a military position into a regular civilian job. Some of them, though, it's making that transition to a different environment. The other part is they feel like they lose connectivity, because one of the great things about the military is you feel very connected to your fellow soldiers, Marines, sailors, whoever you're serving with in your unit, because that's part of what we do. We have a camaraderie, esprit de corps, and you lose that, and that's what we're trying to recreate with the Watchstander program, because we have a lot of great organizations across Northeast Florida and the United States that it's almost like a fraternal order of veterans in stay connected, and really that's where we feel like we can help them, because by and large, most veterans come out, they're very successful in a civilian career. But what we want them to do is really feel still connected to other veterans. And then also we want to also help military families, because military families, as you know, Melissa, are also serving with the veterans and also with our active duty counterparts day to day. And we feel like if we can connect the veterans to services, that will help them, help their families, and then that way they can be successful.
So again, this is an easy way to help in this national effort, as the Fire Watch is up and running here on the First Coast. Join them in their fight to end veteran suicide. Go to thefirewatch.org, learn more about this, and sign up to take this free Watchstander training course and do your part. And I want to thank you, General Mike Fleming, for sharing this with us as we honor veterans on the program all this week. So thank you so much for joining us.
Melissa, thank you so much for everything you're doing for veterans. And like I said, this is, people ask what they can do for veterans. This is a practical way to learn how you can directly support veterans that you know.
Again, thefirewatch.org. Well, after a tumultuous time in American politics, we have a president-elect in this country. If you need a distraction from all of that, our book club leader, Stacey Goldring, has some suggestions that celebrate America. We're going to literally and figuratively turn the page right now. Hi, Stacey. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. And so let's talk books for a minute. You have some great ideas for the next month people can get into that really tell the story of America, but they'll hopefully also get our mind off all the tumult we've been through lately.
Yeah, I think it's important to focus always on what we have in common, because really I don't care where we differ. I just want to get along. And
yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, it all comes from the power of the written word. So my first recommendation is a great book by the late, great Nora Ephron. And it is prescriptive for what we've been through these past few days. And it is called I Remember Nothing.
And that actually sounds good right about now.
Doesn't it, though? Yes. And I think reading this book now, as opposed to prior to all this crazy we've been through lately, I think that Nora speaks to us and is very relevant to what we've been through. Sure, she wrote it with the ideas as we get older, you know, I'm lucky if I can remember keys or call keys, let alone where I left them. But in this case, I think it's sometimes it's good to just start off fresh. And that's what this book offers up. Work with what we've got. And so my first recommendation, I Remember Nothing by Nora Ephron, is a humorous way to give thanks as we come into this Thanksgiving holiday.
That's great. And let's talk about the next one on your list, The Boys in the Boat.
Sure. Oh, my goodness. I may have spoken to you about this in the past, but of course, I remember nothing, so it's all new again. But this book is nonfiction, and it is about the 1936 University of Washington's rowing team, this scrappy rowing team who made their way to the Olympics in Berlin. Although it is nonfiction, it reads like a book, and it represents everything good about us as Americans, how we get stuff done. We put our mind to it, and we do it. And I guarantee you, those boys in the boat could care less who voted for who, whatever. The idea is you put your mind to a task, and you accomplish it. It is so inspiring. You don't have to know anything about a boat. You don't have to know anything about rowing, although I recommend you learn about those things because those are also wonderful and a part of who we are as America. But Boys in the Boat is an excellent book. It's also been made into a film. You may have caught it on our own local PBS station.
Was that a documentary about them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, by Daniel James Brown. Yeah. So good.
And they need to make this story into a Hollywood movie, don't they? It'd be like Hoosiers, but in a boat, a crew team.
You're so right. Yeah. It would be like a Hoosiers. Yeah. It's just so beautifully done. And you're really pulling, which is a rowing term, for these guys to get the gold and how they do it and how close they get to historical events that were happening in the world at that time as well. Just the idea of you can do it if you put your mind to it. You know, there's this great quote by this great philosopher named Jan from The Office. And she says, you know, there's a million reasons not to do something. And my God, if I haven't used that a bazillion times a day. But The Boys in the Boat speaks to that philosophy. There's no excuses. You pull a team together. And you get it done. You have a common goal. End of story. So my heart beats so fast talking about this book, as it does when you try to get in a boat and row, because it takes every last breath out of you. So Boys in a Boat, and that is by Daniel James Brown.
That sounds like a great read. Now, in the few minutes we have left, can you tell us about another book on your list where you will be having an online book club discussion about? It's City Boy by Herman Woke.
Yes. And you've probably never heard of City Boy by Herman Woke because it's one of these titles by a great American author who it kind of got left behind. Because he wrote Caine Mutiny, War and Remembrance, Winds of War. You know, he became such a blockbuster.
Marjorie Morningstar.
Oh my gosh, I love that book, and that should be remade too. And we should think who should play Marjorie. That would be very fun. Okay.
Didn't
anyway,
Natalie Wood star in the movie?
She did.
Yeah, but we're getting off track. Yep. Tell us about City Boy.
Sorry. Yeah. So City Boy is basically a Tom Sawyer-esque Huckleberry Finn type of story set in the late 1920s in New York. And it is the story of our lovable Herbie Bookbinder, who falls in love with a little red-haired girl named Lucille, I think Charles Schulz probably read, little boy. And he talks his parents into sending him to summer camp so he can spend the summer eyeballing Lucy, you know, across the lake. And it just talks about the foibles and fables of, you know, little city boy who, you know, he's a nerd. He's kind of chunky. And he just wants to be loved for more than his brains and his personality. And, of course, there's the rival of the tall, athletic kid. And there's the dorky camp counselor and the goofy, you know, the goofy teachers. It's everything we need right now to feel nostalgic about America. And read it through Herman Wouk's fabulous writing, which is like he's our own Charles Dickens.
Now, let me ask you then, how can people join your virtual book club discussion?
Just go to Chapter and Notes on Facebook and sign up. And we'd love to see you online.
It's chapterendnotes.com or chapterendnotes on Facebook. Get involved in this community-wide book club. Book clubs are meeting everywhere virtually these days for obvious reasons, and you can join our book club here on the show. Just follow Stacy online on social media and check out her list of November book club suggestions. So good to hear your voice, and these are such great titles. I think everybody's in the mood to just curl up now over the holidays with a good book.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You said it.
Thanks so much, Stacy.
Thank you, Melissa.
Again, that website is chapterendnotes.com. And if you have a suggestion or a question about our First Coast Connect book club, send us an email. We have a special email out there just for all you bibliophiles. Email us at bookclub@wjct.org. A quick break, but when we come back, a new exhibit at Florida Mining Gallery captures this epoch. We'll explain in just a moment. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Don't go away.
You blink, you reach for that handful of chips, you scroll through social media, it's all happening on automatic pilot. When it comes to being well-informed, being more mindful of where you get your news can make a big difference in how you see the world. To get your information in context, to gain different perspectives, and to understand real issues, choose NPR as your go-to source for election news. 2020 election, it's time to listen.
Here on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm Robert Scott. I've been a sustaining supporter of WJCT for over 10 years now. I listen to WJCT all the time, and I have since I was a young adult. One of my favorite shows is actually a local show, and that's First Coast Connect. One of the great values, I think, is listeners are invited to call in. By the end of the hour, I'm definitely more informed about an issue. It's also made me think about it a lot deeper than I probably would have. This is WJCT News 89.9.
As a candidate, Joe Biden tried to walk the middle road on how to best reform policing. How successful will he be now that he's the president-elect?
If anyone has the ability to bring everyone together on these policing issues, it is Joe Biden.
I'm Elsa Chang. The future of police reform under a Biden administration. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 here on WJCT News 89.9.
Joe Biden says he wants to unite a divided America. Easier said than done, leaders around the globe face the same challenge.
How do you roll back the rage? How do you bring people together? I think that is the question today, not just in the U.S. and Lebanon, but beyond as well.
Rage, unity, and what comes next as a new presidency begins. It's On the World.
Today at 3 on WJCT News 89.9.
The people of this nation have spoken. They've delivered us a clear victory.
But despite President-elect Joe Biden's victory in the presidential race, President Trump vows to fight on.
The counting and lawsuits continue as Biden starts to build his cabinet. That's next time on Here and Now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
There's another winner from this year's election results, and that's America's repudiation of its past war on drugs. In every state where a ballot measure included a choice on local drug laws, voters sided with reformers. I'm Jen White. Who does this help? And what's next for those worried about who this might harm? Next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Thanks. Welcome back. It's a vibrant new collection of works featuring recognized artists from across the Southeast. The new Epoch exhibit is now on display at Jacksonville's Florida Mining Gallery. With more now on the line, we welcome curator Marcus Kenny. Hey, Marcus.
Good morning.
Good morning. And gallery owner Steve Williams. Hi, Steve.
Hi, good morning.
Steve, let's start with you as the owner of Florida Mining Gallery and also Harbinger Signs. What prompted your decision to put up a new exhibit now in the middle of this pandemic? How is this being done?
Well, we just felt like it was time that we all start looking at some beautiful things again. And, with the vaccine announcement, it's just perfect timing. So we're very excited to put the work together.
And what was it about this particular exhibit, Epoch, that drew your interest?
We're very interested in building relationships across the Southeast and creating a place that's special and important. And bringing Marcus in with 14 artists from all around the Southeast, including, I think, 3 or 4 from Jacksonville, was important to us.
Sure. So, Marcus, the curator of Epoch, tell us a little bit more about this. Epoch, you know, kind of says to me it's defining the era that we're living in. Is that what we'll experience when we come to view these works?
I hope so. I mean, that's sort of the premise behind putting these artists together. It's sort of a large group show of 14 artists, so we're hoping to get some different perspectives on, what this past year has been like. But I think, viewers to the exhibit will sort of, see all the threads that connect the works together. I think it's pretty powerful seeing it all together, because when I chose the works and the artists, you're looking at individual pieces and individual artists. But then when we installed it all together, it really came together and tells a pretty powerful story.
And what story is that? Is it the story of the pandemic, the story of our politics right now, or maybe a little bit of both?
It's both, for sure. I mean, there are references to, the Black Lives Matter movement, social issues. There are certainly references to the pandemic. A lot of the portraits that are in the show, and this sort of just, I noticed when I was putting the pieces together, that a lot of the artists, made references to masks, if not specific masks on the portraits, but lines across the faces. So you'll see a lot of references to, pretty much everything that we've experienced this year, even the anxiety and the unrest, and it's pretty diverse. There's paintings, photographs, sculptures, drawings, lots of different ways that artists have communicated their feelings during this time period.
And art in a time of unrest can be so powerful. Steve Williams, this exhibit, Epoch, opened at your gallery, the Florida Mining Gallery, yesterday, and it runs through the first week of February, and you want people to come see it, but see it safely. So what are the COVID protocols you're undertaking?
Absolutely. We have gallery hours 10 to 5 daily, and then by appointment, and we ask everyone who comes in wears a mask. We're only letting a couple people in at a time. to see the exhibition until February, where we'll have a closing reception, and we're really hopeful that we can all be together.
Sure. And a Florida Mining Gallery is a beautiful space on the south side. It's also housed inside your larger business, isn't it, Harbinger Sign?
Yes, absolutely. We have a small business there. We're the oldest sign company in Jacksonville. We've been here since 1962, and we've had the gallery since 2010.
So you're celebrating 10 years on the First Coast, too. That's exciting. So if you're in the mood to check out a new exhibit, check out Epic, up now at Jacksonville's Florida Mining Gallery. Monday through Friday, 10 to 5, or by appointment. Go to floridamininggallery.com for more. And thank you, gallery owner Steve Williams and curator Marcus Kenny. Guys, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Melissa.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Thanks to all of our guests and callers, too. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is show director. Our news director is Jessica Palumbo, and Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor. Keep your feedback coming. We appreciate your emails. Send them to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And if you missed any portion of today's show, catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock. You can also listen to our podcast anytime, wherever you like to listen to yours. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.